Why has Bill Curry been your hometown Ford dealer for nearly 60 years? It starts with one of the industry's best lifetime warranties for new and pre-owned vehicles, enhanced by 10-year roadside assistance and free maintenance for a year. Also included are nitrogen tire fills, F-150 and Super Duty bedliners, paint and fabric protection, and more. Add an extensive inventory and concierge customer service, and it's easy to see why Bill Curry is still Tampa Bay's first family of Ford. On Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. I'm Bobby Fenton, late night edition on the Back Porch Show. Here, after the Bucks get their first win of the season, first win of the Bruce Arians era, and hopefully first of many wins in 2019, they go up to Carolina and win in primetime, 20-14. Thank you for joining me. So, like I just said, it's 1 a.m. after the game. I couldn't wait. I could have recorded on Friday morning like I do when there's something on Thursday night, but I said, nope, I'm going to record this show tonight after the game because I couldn't wait to get behind a microphone and talk about this. So I want to thank all you for joining me. I'm a little more muted, you might have noticed this week, and you may actually prefer it, but usually I'm very loud. I talk in a booming voice into the microphone. Obviously, everybody in my house is asleep. I decided to come out to the back patio and out here, and I'm in a great spot. Love late nights on the back porch. But, you know, I do have some houses surrounding me, some of my neighbors, all of whom I'm friends with, and none of whom I want to disturb. So I think it's sounding fine. I'm just going to kind of keep a lower tone of voice than I usually keep. And that's going to be hard to do because that win got me fired up tonight. That win made me a believer. And I'll be honest with you, I wasn't even a believer midway through the game or even toward the end of the game. And so we've got a lot to get to. And we will do all those things. You know, we never got a chance to do the show after the 49ers game. Now we've got this one. There's a whole lot on our plate. Of course, the Free Stretch, as always, brought to you by Tampa's first family of Ford, Bill Curry Ford, where they are proud to announce the nationwide lifetime warranty that's on new and pre-owned vehicles, literally anything you buy from them. And you can go on the website, BillCurryFord.com. It's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. You can pre-check all the inventory, and they've even got more when you go over there. They got, hundreds of cars over there. So anything you buy, whether it's new, used, pre-owned, I'm not talking about your run-of-the-mill warranty. Engine blows 3 years from now, bring it back to Bill Curry Ford. They'll take care of it. That's what the lifetime warranty is, and no one else is doing that. Plus, you get 10-year roadside assistance and one-year complimentary service where you can bring it in for oil changes and stuff like that. So you're going to find great deals at Bill Curry Ford, probably better than anywhere else, but even if they're comparable to other places, again, other places don't have the lifetime warranty, and that is a big difference maker. So see all the details at the website, BillCurryFord.com, or go see Sean Sullivan, the GM, good friend of mine, in person, and you can mention the Joe Bucks Fan website, you can mention the Free Stretch, you can mention me, any one of those things will get you the Joe Bucks Fan discount on top of the already transparent online pricing. In person, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry, just north of Hillsboro, or again, the website, BillCurryFord.com. So, tonight, this game had a lot to get to. And the overall theme for me, first of all, I mean, I know everybody's thinking the same thing. You know, it's been a long time. Well, I shouldn't say a long time. We've had some spells of good defense. But it's been a long time since, even as fans, much less the team, that we were able to have that attitude of, yeah, dude, our defense has this. Hey, go ahead. Go ahead. Come at our defense. See what happens. Go ahead, be down a touchdown late in the game, having to score to stay alive. See how that goes for you. That swagger, you know? When's the last time you felt that way about our defense? I mean, a little bit, what was it, a few years ago? I can't remember, it was 2016, they were decent. But, and I'm not saying they're there yet now either, but when this coaching staff took over, and I talked all preseason and all offseason about how the outlook of the team was going to rely mainly on the coaching staff making a big difference because we have a lot of players who are the same guys we've already had. In fact, we lost a few from last year. And so it's either guys who are total question marks or it's relying on the coaching staff to make those same guys from past years better players now or their system being more tailored to what we have. And tonight, and again, it's only game two. If I had done a show after game one the other day, and I didn't do one because we had the Thursday night game, but if I had done one, I would have come on here and cautioned everybody not to get too wrapped up in it, because we've seen so many game ones over past years that have the opposite, that have led us to believe great things were in store, only to see, you know, double-digit losses ensue. And the same thing applies now. I mean, this is a 1-1 team. That was a great win. Cast iron nuts by the defense, but it was still just one win. And it was a lot of luck involved, as any of these close games. And in the NFL, you're going to play tons of these types of games every year. And there were so many instances tonight where that game could have gone either way. But they got the job done. And not only did they get the job done, but it came down to like one series, one play, one goal line stand. And when it mattered most, I mean, Vernon Hargraves, talk about him for a second, okay? One of the guys I meant when I said, hey, we're relying on the same guys we've already had just to be better. He was a big question mark. He'd been injured. We didn't really know what we had, even though he'd been here a few years now because of his injuries. I mean, he had won almost two seasons completely lost with the injuries. And now not only was he back, but he was being leaned on to be the number one guy. He's the number one corner. And I said, is he a number one corner? Like, can he be that guy? We know he could be a number two or something like that. But is he that guy? And tonight, aside from pass defense and things like that, and it's just so nice to see guys doing what they're supposed to be doing, like doing what they're in their element to do. And I hate to like bash someone who's out the door and not here anymore, but I couldn't help but think as I'm watching that game tonight, like, man, Mike Smith really sucked hard. Like, he really sucked out loud to keep trotting that same defense out there, do the same things he was doing over and over and all that stuff. And to see Vernon Hargraves rolled up, to see the whole defense looking like it was, again, it had a purpose, had an idea of what they wanted to do. Not just an idea, but a philosophy, an ethos, if you will. Like, it just, and watching Hargraves was a classic example. And again, not just pass coverage. He had 12 tackles tonight. He had 12 tackles. I mean, he stuck his nose in there. And of course, the biggest one, the last play of the game, or the last play for Carolina in the game. And I'll tell you what, that play happened. I saw McCaffrey running toward the sideline. I said to my buddy, I watched the game over at my buddy's house tonight. I just got home a little while ago. I said, touchdown. Like, there was no way with his speed, it looked like he wasn't getting the corner. Or he was at least getting the first down, if not the touchdown. I was sure of it. And Hargraves was actually, and he said in the post-game interview, he knew he had it all along. Said, yeah, I just had to get around, you know, make sure I didn't get blocked. Had a play right in front of me, just had to make the play. And it was very close. I mean, you know, in real time, it looked like he stopped him. But on those replays, McCaffrey reaches that ball for him. It was very close. I thought for sure that they'd, you know, maybe do something with it in the review. But everything stood as it was. And, I mean, that's just cast iron cojones. That's all it is from both Hargraves and the entire defense. And to see the job that they all did. I mean, McCaffrey tonight, let me look the numbers up here. McCaffrey tonight, I think, had his lowest average that he's ever had in a game where he had at least a certain amount of carries, whatever. Let me look here. Hang on. McCaffrey tonight, and this is courtesy of Trevor Sikkema, who's a great follow on Twitter for the Bucs. He says, McCaffrey was second in the NFL in rushing after his performance in week one. He had 128 yards last week. Tonight, of course, 37 yards on 16 carries. That 2.3 yards per carry average is the lowest average of his career in any game where he's had at least 10 carries. And it was the discipline. You know, you saw, like, you know, sometimes you'll see guys and they're in position to make a play, but they'll lunge at a guy's legs and get sidestepped, or they'll just over-pursue. And everybody on the Bucs defense tonight was exactly where, especially when McCaffrey had the ball, nobody over-pursued. Everybody was good at filtering the play back into where they knew they had help coming from. No one guy had to go, you know, again, over-pursue or get out of position to try and make a play. And there was just nowhere for McCaffrey to go. And, you know, Cam, you look at him last week, he didn't throw it. He threw it downfield, I think, one time in the entire game. He's not, I'm not saying, I mean, last year he was hurt with the shoulder. He's not hurt now, I don't think. But he's not where he needs to be. He's been regressing for several starts now, dating back to last season. And when you have a guy like McCaffrey that can make that not necessarily that big of a deal, but the Bucs made Cam beat him tonight, and Cam couldn't do it. And the Bucs defense, I think, knew it, and Todd Bowles knew it. really impressive to see. Of course, Shaq Barrett, 3 sacks. He's got 4 total. He leads the NFL as of now. Of course, he's got that extra game on everybody. But still, he's the first Buck since Jaquez Smith to have 3 sacks in the game. He's the first Buck since 1991 to have 3 sacks all in one quarter. All 3 of his sacks tonight were in one quarter. And again, I'm doing this show after the game, immediately after the game. So it's 1 in the morning here on my back patio. Vita Vea, I want to mention Vita Vea. You know, Minter was in there getting pressure. Bo Allen forced a Cam Newton mistake with pressure when he got hit as he threw. You had, of course, Shaq Barrett. And, you know, all along, I watched all those plays, and I rewound it a few times where I had chances. And Vita Vea, okay? When he is healthy, which he looks to be right now, he is an absolute monster. Let's give Jason Light some. I mean, Jason Light's obviously had some issues with the draft, but that was a good draft pick, okay? And I know they could have gotten other people. I talked about how, you know, it would have been nice to have Quentin Nelson with our offensive line. But Vita Vea, I mean, every single snap out there, he's got 2 Carolina Panthers. He's got 1 in 1 fist and 1 in the other. Like, just, it's almost like when you watch a guy's bench press with the barbell, but then you watch another guy do the dumbbell press and they got a dumbbell in each hand. Like, that's what it looks like with Vita Vea, like, up front. Like, he just gets up there over the football. They got 2 guys opposite him every down. And he gets the, like I say, he gets a fistful of one and a fistful of the other, and he's just, like, moving them. Even if he can't get penetration himself, he moves the whole conflict back into the pocket. And even more importantly, he occupies 2 blockers every time. And that's what's allowing these guys, whether it's, again, Barrett or whether it's Minter or whoever it was, Bo Al. I mean, don't discount Vita Vea's influence there. I mean, that was a big deal. And if he's healthy like that, like I said, I mean, they're always going to have a chance with him alongside Sue like that, because the guy can just bench press with 1 arm each almost any offensive lineman in the league, it seems like. I mean, he just grabs fistfuls of it and just, I mean, he's a road grader. You know, they always call offensive linemen road graders when they're really good. He's the opposite. He's a defensive line road grader. So he was awesome. And you look at the overall performance of the Bucs defense, no touchdowns for Carolina. It really, the game should not have been as close as it was. I mean, no touchdowns for Carolina, 3 turnovers on downs. The Bucs scored 2 touchdowns, so that whenever you score 2 touchdowns more than your opponent, never mind they won the turnover battle as well, that game should have been a double-digit game. But again, it just goes to show you how fine the line is. And if you look at the penalties and when they happen, I know I saw some people on Twitter, because there was that bad fourth down spot that gave Carolina a first down. There was a couple other smaller things being like, oh, the Bucs had to beat the Panthers and the refs tonight. I didn't see it that way. I mean, the referees had a tough night, I thought, but I thought the Bucs probably benefited more than the Panthers did. I mean, the first series of the game, which was really big, I thought Cam had the first down. This is before the lightning delay. He reaches the ball forward, looked like he was good to go to me. The Bucs got lucky that with the lightning the way it was, Fox had to pull some camera guys off of their positions, even though the game was being played. And that actually robbed them of replay angles, because I thought if they had better replay angles in the first quarter, I thought the spot of Cam's ball on the fourth down that they did not convert would have been, I thought he had it. I thought he reached the ball over. But there was that. There was the face mask by Carlton Davis that didn't get called upon review. Or excuse me, that got called. It was the illegal contact that they can't review. They were reviewing for pass interference, and the replay showed, yeah, it probably wasn't pass interference, but it was definitely illegal contact. Bucs got away with that one. And then I thought the McCaffrey play was a lot closer than they made it out to be, too. The Bucs did. There was a few bad calls, too. They had a terrible call on a Bucs interception on, I think it was Carlton Davis again, called him for defensive holding, or it might have been Jamel Dean, but there was no holding whatsoever, just an atrocious call. But there was a fumble forced a couple plays later by Lavonte David on Cam Newton. The Bucs got it back anyway, so that was kind of a moot point. And so I thought overall the Bucs probably got a couple breaks from the officials. But either way, that final sequence. And again, what I tell you, like, every season, 16 games, you might have 2 or 3 where it's like, oh, we're not winning this one. You just, you know, you get your ass kicked that day. Maybe more than that in the past with these Bucs teams. But in a typical season, 2 or 3 like that. All the way around, 2 or 3 where you cruise, And you've got like 10 games in the middle there that come down to a penalty, you know, a dropped pick, something like that. How big was the sequence? And we would have crucified him for it. And this is why it's always important to see the big picture, not just being results-oriented, but process-oriented. We would have crucified Jameis Winston if Luke Kuechly hangs on to that interception. It was Kuechly, right? He dropped it. Big spot in the third quarter. And then what happened after the play? Not only did they not pick it off, which they should have, Gerald McCoy gets into it with a couple of Bucks linemen, slaps a guy in the face, kind of shoves a guy with his gloved hand, and he gets a 15-yard penalty. We went from throwing a just back-breaking pick to not only not having the pick, but advancing 15 yards for a first down. That was a gigantic spot in the game right there. I mean, a huge sequence. And it cannot be underestimated how random all that stuff is. That could just as easily have been a pick. I think Jameis had one other one dropped. And he had the one dropped against the 49ers last week that, beside the three that he had, you know, didn't get mentioned that much. And, it, you know, Jameis Winston overall had a very good game that I thought he was solid. But, I mean, it, again, just pointing out how little the distance is from the outhouse to the penthouse as far as us sitting here and saying, oh my God, this guy, he'll just never figure it out. I can't believe we're still sticking with this schlub. He clearly can't do this. Just saying, hey, good improvement. A big step forward tonight for Jameis. Excited. I think he's definitely in line to get at least franchise tagged, if not a new contract. You know, same performance, same guy. Totally different perspective we have just based on what amounts to randomness, really, when you think about it. So, you know, watching the game tonight, and I'll admit it, okay, I didn't write the game off, but when the Bucks, what disappointed, let's go over what disappointed me before I get to Jameis and all that. I thought the Bucks didn't try hard enough to close the deal on offense. I thought there were a couple times in the red zone I had a problem with the play call, and I know this is something that's pretty common for anybody, but these third downs in the red zone, these are four-point plays. Like, these are huge plays. I mean, you know, anytime you have a third down, it's big. You want to keep the drive alive, have a chance to score. The defense is trying to get off the field. But third downs in the red zone, I mean, those are four-point plays a lot of the time. Not just the ones that are and goal, but any third down in the red zone. I think it was the first quarter, Bucks had third and three. Just get the 3 yard. They went to the end zone. Low percentage play. Mike Evans tried to, like, make a one-hand circus catch that he couldn't come up with. And they end up kicking a field goal. And I thought that was a really big spot at the time. I thought that was a big... They could have gotten the 3 yards. Like, call something that's going to get you to the stick and just get it. Then you can still go for the end zone, but get yourself a first down. They took a low percentage flyer, which is fine on first and second now, but should not be done on third down inside the red zone, in my opinion. Settled for a field goal. That game made that one. Later in the game, same thing. They had a big third down. This is with the game on the line. This is with them up by a score of 17 at the time, 17 to 14, where if you score a touchdown, you win the game. Like, the game is over if you score a touchdown. And they ran the ball, and then on third down, they got conservative, and then, or excuse me, on second down, they got conservative. Then third down comes up, and then they only needed a couple more yards because their runs got them a couple yards. Third and whatever it was, I think it was four that time. They throw another one to Mike Evans, who never even got off the line of scrimmage. He couldn't beat the press coverage, never even looked up for the ball. Just again, and that's fine, I'm not ripping Evans for that, but my point is, these plays are low percentage. Like, those are plays that you call when it's not that big of a deal. It's not a do-or-die play if you don't get it. Whenever you gotta have it, whenever you have a chance, like, hey, this is third down, we need this first down, don't be messing with that stuff. That annoyed me. It really did. So the Bucks settled for the field goal, which Matt Gay made. He had missed the one before that, but he made that one to make it 20-14. So now you've got your dreaded six-point lead where your touchdown still beats you. Like, the game could have been over right then and there. Should have been over right then and there. And the Bucks offense and Byron Leftwich as well could not get it done. And so we kick off to the Panthers. Naturally, they hit like a 40-yarder on the first play. They're already at midfield. There's like almost, I think there was over 3 minutes left at that time. My good friend Derek Sharp, who I used to work with over at 620, tweeted out, hey, you know, he didn't mean this literally, and I didn't either, but he said, you know, the Bucs should almost let the Panthers score here just to have enough time to go down and kick a field goal of their own. Last thing you want is from the bleed clock and score a touchdown and beat you 21-20 with like 8 seconds left and you don't have time to organize anything on your end. You almost want to just get in the end zone, get the ball back, go kick the game-winning field goal. And I retweeted and I said, yeah, I actually just thought about this too. I didn't say it out loud to my buddies. And then somebody who, let me give him credit. I want to give credit to whoever it was. And I didn't mean they should literally let them score. I more meant that I wouldn't have had a problem if Carolina had scored there. You know, I didn't believe in the defense. Not because I didn't think they were good, but it just felt like one of those games where they had just been asked over and over again to come up with something, and they met and answered the bell every time. And you know how it feels like you're just going to, your luck's going to run out. You can't go to the well that many times. That's what I thought was going to happen. It was Kevin Kennedy responded to both me and Derek. You guys are lame. And he's kind of right. That was a pretty lame take. Because the defense ended up standing up and making the stop. And if Carolina scores there, there's no guarantee, if far from it, obviously, that we go down and kick a field goal. But I just felt like, you know, it felt like a karmic thing. Like, here we go. We piddled around. We settled for field goals when we could have had touchdowns. We let this game get away from us. We should have, again, I mean, the game, the Bucs should have been in control in the fourth quarter cruising. The fact that that was a game late, you know, is not reflect well on the Bucs, I don't think, because they led every important category, and the most important category is touchdowns themselves. Again, having a two-touchdown lead, now, I mean, your point lead is 14 points. I mean, you've scored two more touchdowns than your opponent. You know, never mind, again, the turnover battle, like I said, and all that. You ought to be winning that game comfortably. And the Bucs put the ball in Carolina's hands in the final 3 minutes. With Carolina scores, they win. It should have never come down to that. I was disappointed in that. But nevertheless, that's when this D, and I will completely own it. I'll completely eat my words. I thought this defense had been asked to just make one stop too many. It was a bridge too far. That's what I thought. But they were up for the challenge one more time. And hats off to them. And hats off to the Bucs for being a 1-1 football team. Email me if you want to, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. That's BobbyGameday @yahoo.com on Twitter. You can get me at Bobby Game Day. And talk about Jameis for a minute. So I sat down last week and prepared to do a show sometime this week where the main part of the show was going to be just talking about the 49ers game, which at the time was the only game we played. Then as it got to be like Wednesday, I was like, what's the point of me doing a show now with the game tomorrow night? Let me just wait for the game and I'll record one after the game. So that's what I did. But if you've been listening to this show for any amount of time, you know that, one, I'm a pretty optimistic person, and two, I've been very patient with Jameis Winston. I've been trying to convince you guys and anybody else who will listen that he still has a lot of growth to be done, that he isn't just what we already think he is, and that, you know, a lot of people think, oh, well, this is what you get. You know by now it's his fifth season, and I've been trying to tell you all the reasons why I don't think that's true, how quarterbacks really don't hit their stride to their late 20s, how Jameis is only, to this day, 1.5 years, a year and a half older than Tom Brady was when he made his first ever start. So even though he's not a fresh-faced rookie in his fifth year, he's the same age of what fresh-faced rookies used to be, you know, that played a full career in college and all that. He's young, man. And I tried to, you know, really hammer that home and talk about that in the show last week before the San Francisco game. So then he goes out in the San Francisco game. I felt like a jack-off. Like, I was personally insulted, and I'm not, you're not supposed to do this because it's not about me being right or wrong, but I went out there and backed that guy. And then not only did the Bucs lose the game, which would have been fine because you're not going to win every game, but to have that type of performance against San Francisco, I felt resentful. Like, dude, I'm trying my best to sell you as a franchise quarterback for this team, and you're making me look dumb. That's how I felt after last Sunday. Because there was no excuse. I know Bruce Arians watched the film, and two of them he excused and all that. And then there was the one that, oh, well, one did go through O.J. Howard's hands and bounce up in the air. That we all saw. That was a completely normal and fine throw. But the one that was out wide to Peyton Barber, he ran the wrong route with a hot read. He went too deep. Yeah, okay, fine, he did, but whatever. That happens in football games. Same thing with the game clincher off what was supposed to be the screen pass. Dare got caught up in traffic, wasn't where he was supposed to be. Jameis just said, hell with it, I'm throwing it anyway. I know he'd gotten a grounding penalty earlier, so he felt maybe a little squeamish about just throwing the ball off the ground, but still. Like, at this point, it's getting harder and harder and harder for me to defend Jameis Winston. Now, with that said, if you look at his five worst games of his career in terms of QBR, okay, in four of the 5 weeks after those losses, the Bucks won. He won. So Jameis has always had a bounce-back type of gene. Like, that's something that has been a pattern over his career, where when he's had these terrible games, he usually comes out the next game and plays halfway okay, if not very well. And that happened again tonight. So, you know, at this point, there's no more excuses to be made. I mean, I know he's young, but he is in his fifth year. He is under a new offense. There's going to be, and that's another thing we have to keep in mind, it's going to take a few weeks. It's going to take 4 to 6 weeks or whatever it is with Bruce Arians' offense for Jameis to get right and get where he needs to be. That has to be mentioned. It's not an excuse. It's just a fact. But still, like, I can't go out there after what happened last week and try to convince somebody, oh, no. He's just young. He'll be fine. We're just going to cut the interceptions out of his game, but keep all the good stuff. We're just going to spot treat the bad things, and then we'll have the perfect quarterback. It's been long enough where people who are... Here's the evolution. I've made an evolution, okay? Here's my evolution. I'm still backing Jameis. I still believe he'll be the quarterback in 2020. I still believe he gives us our best chance to have the franchise quarterback that every team needs. I don't think we need to go back to the drawing board on that just yet. But whereas I used to not only think that, but actively scorn people who didn't, now at the very least, people who don't think that, I can't take that away from them. I gotta say, yeah, man, you might be right. We just don't know yet. I used to scorn people who were like, ah, Jameis, get the hell out of here with this guy. He's a clown. He's a bum. I used to make fun of those people on this show, their lack of foresight and things like that. But, man, every time a game like last Sunday happens, it makes it harder and harder to do that, to the point where now I still don't agree with that, but I'm certainly not going to call anyone out for it anymore. But then, as has been his form many times before, he bounced back today. And so the game last week against San Francisco, does that mean he's history's greatest monster at quarterback? He's one of the worst of all time? No, it doesn't mean that. But his good game tonight also doesn't mean, hey, he's turned a corner and everything's fine now, because he's done this before. He yo-yos a lot. And some people think, yeah, he does yo-yo, and that's why you got to just admit you're going to get that, and that's it. That's what you're going to get from him. And maybe they're right. I really hope they're not. I really hope we can still filter out the bad stuff and keep all the good stuff. But again, tonight he had a couple plays. I mean, here's one thing I think. I'm not there in the meeting rooms or in practice. It feels like they don't want him running. And I actually think that's one of the better parts of his game. What Jameis has always been really good at is, one, using his legs, not just necessarily to run, but to buy time, get outside the pocket, or just find soft spots in the offensive backfield when there's pressure around, just to give him a couple more seconds. If he has to roll all the way out, he can do that. And he did that tonight on a couple of plays, but there were a couple other ones I saw where the pocket, I mean, the O-line, for their part, they didn't have a great game, I didn't think, but there was a few points there where Jameis was able to stand in there and really just take a look at things, and nobody would be open, or at least he didn't perceive anyone as open. I would have to watch the All-22 to know for sure. Point is, either way, he'd stand there, and he'd dance around. Like, he needs to take off and run. He's good at that. Like, a lot of times, these plays, especially if you get 2 or 3 seconds of protection, or even more than that, the entire middle of the field vacates. It is cleared out. And there were a few times where Jameis was standing at the line of scrimmage, only had a lineman in front of him to beat with a blocker to help him. He could have gotten 5, 10, 15 yards on some of those. But, again, I don't know this for sure. I feel like he's standing in there because that's what they've told him to do. And he kept looking and looking and looking. And one time he took a bad sack when he should have thrown it away, but at least he didn't throw it into crap and get it picked off. A couple other times there were some other questionable ones. I feel like that part of his game is important. I hope they aren't neutering that. You know, he still needs to be able to do that, or feel like he can do. I don't want him bailing out on plays that might have a chance still. I mean, you always want to keep your eyes downfield and throw. But I think that's a factor, because you can see him back there, and he gets that deep squat he does. You know, he gets real low and athletic, and he's patting the ball, and he's getting frantic, like his feet are moving all over the place. And it's like, dude, your entire offensive line and defensive pressure is 5 yards behind you. You've stepped up through the pocket. There ain't no linebackers there. Run, get 10 yards. That's a big part of his game. I think he needs to... I hope he hasn't had that beaten out of him. But either way, a good performance tonight. We really, really... And I'm agreeing 100% with myself here, because I admit totally to being a reactionary sometimes, but we're really going to have to work hard this year not to be reactionary, because it was so easy last week to react to that performance and it would have been too much. And this is one reason why I'm almost glad I don't do these shows normally right after a game, because if I had done a show right after the 49ers game, you know, it wouldn't have been a good representation of what I really think, because I was heated. And maybe tonight's not a good representation either, because Jameis played well, but it's really a body of work, and it really has to be treated that way. It's not necessarily always easy to do. It's easier when they win than when they lose, though. Email me if you want to, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can find me at bobbygameday, and it's bobbygameday@yahoo.com. So, and just to recap it one more time, I mean, just see the big picture. They won tonight, that's really good, but that could have been a lot worse, and don't lose sight of how quickly your perceptions can change just based on the final score, even if the product of four quarters worth of football wasn't necessarily all that different. When the end result's better, it seems like everything's better. I mean, another one. Well, besides all the incessant penalties, which the Bucs cost themselves with penalties so many times over the years, we can't even count. Like I always say, we had another special teams one tonight. Bobo Wilson breaks one. Jamel Dean puts his hands on a guy's back. I don't understand what is so hard about it. I don't understand how guys at the highest level of the sport don't understand how to do this yet. Special teams is not hard. Go block a guy, ear hole them. They've all got assignments. There's different kickoff coverages and punt block coverages and all that stuff. But whatever it is, block him, and if he beats you or gets by you, move on. That's it. If a guy runs right by you, I mean, runs. If I was a coach, this is what I would say, and I have said this when I have coached. If a guy runs right by you and makes the play on your return man, tackles him right there, I won't be half as mad as if you're trying so hard to stop it that you commit a penalty, which is just going to kill us. Like, don't do that. I hate special teams penalties. So Bobo broke one tonight, which was huge. I mean, would have set the Bucs up. Flags are out there. What happened? They show the replay. Oh, well, the guy flopped. He probably could have gone down a lot more softly than that. He threw himself down. Dean barely touched him. Yeah, Dean did realize by the time it was too late that he was behind the guy, but he put his hands on the guy. I really think, maybe I'll do it if I ever get back into coaching at the high school level. Somebody needs to try it. Let return men, they're great athletes, they all have sick moves, it's why they're back there. Let them just work off your body position. Don't even use your hands for anything. These guys cannot go 5 seconds without illegal block, holding, block in the back, whatever. I would tell them to all be like basketball players setting a pick. I want the guy who catches the ball, he's one guy. The other 10 guys, I want their arms crossed over the fronts of their bodies and just run forward in a straight line up the field. Do not deviate from it, okay? And just let the running back or the receiver, whoever's returning kicks, make cuts off of you. It's as simple as that. That was really frustrating. The delay of game, the defensive delay of game on the goal line, there's one that's going to get swept under the rug that no one's going to talk about because who cares? The Bucs got a fourth down stop anyway, and they won. That could have been the game, and that's one thing. And again, this staff, I mean, I have nothing but good things to say about the coaching they've done as far as, you know, developing the players so far. I think you can already tell even through 2 weeks that there's a marked difference there. But that's a pretty egregious error for a coaching staff to make. If you missed it, the Bucs on Carolina's crucial 4th and 2, even though they were on the 3, they could get a first down at the 1. But on that crucial set of downs, they called the timeout. 1, because I think they wanted to stop the clock in case Carolina scored and preserve as much time to come back and kick a field goal as they could. And 2, to talk about the 4th down play. So fine, whatever. They come back out, they call another timeout after the Panthers line up. You can't call 2 timeouts in a row. A coaching staff has got to know that rule. And it's completely inexcusable that anybody would have entertained calling a 2nd one. And if, you know, what happens if that McCaffrey play is another 6 inches forward and he gets it and they win on the next play or two? It'd be this huge story. The Bucs gave him a free yard when a yard was the world. And end up getting them beaten. I mean, it'd just be people be, you know, putting bags over their heads and spray painting stuff on their windows. But, you know, I can't do this anymore. How can this team be so inept? If Carolina scores on that one last play and the guy missed it by inches, that's how fine the line is. It cannot be said enough. But fortunately, Vernon Hargraves and company made a play, and that was a really good play by Hargraves, all right? That wasn't just a good play. That was a really good play. And so we're 1-1. You saw the graphic if you watched the game. They couldn't wait to put it up. 0-2 teams make the playoffs 12% of the time, dating back to 1985 or whatever it was when the current playoff format started. So the Bucks avoided that fate. 1-1, they come home. And if you've been thinking about going to a Bucks game, you got this one on Sunday. Next Sunday, of course, this weekend they don't play. They already played. But you got that one, and then the Bucks don't play at home again for over a month and a half, the notorious part of their schedule that we've talked all about already. So I'll be back on next week. We'll preview the Giants game and get ready for all that. Oh, Devin White, I mentioned Devin White. I mean, haven't heard much from him yet, but he got hurt earlier in the game. After the game, Bruce Arians did say it doesn't appear to be that serious, although Minter did a fine job in replacement of Devin White. It did seem like the Bucks missed a beat anyway. So looking ahead, next week we'll get back on the regular schedule. I wanted to do a post-game show tonight. I'm a little sleepy. I'm a little quieter than usual because I'm outside amongst sleeping neighbors. But this was nice. I love getting back on the back patio, and I love reacting to the games right after they happen. Although, again, that can be a double-edged sword, because if that had happened last week, I would have said a lot of things that I didn't actually mean. And you just got to let these things wash over you one at a time and get ready for the next one. That's what the Bucks will do. I want to thank all of you for listening, and I hope you have a great weekend, whatever it is you're doing. You know, there's some great college football, of course, the full NFL slate on Sunday, minus the Bucks, who've already played, but we'll take it with the win at 1-1. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford for sponsoring the Free Stretch. Thanks to the Joes, as always, for hosting this show on the best place on the internet for Bucks coverage and giving me this platform. If you want a fridge schedule, I got a bunch of emails for fridge schedules. So we've played two games, so what? Let's get you a fridge schedule. Email me, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. I got the Bucks, I got the Gators, I got USF, pretty logos, color, everything you want. I'll email you the file. But in the meantime, be safe, enjoy the weekend. Might have a little tropical depression action. That could be something, but I doubt much. Always be steady, all right? Always be vigilant. And enjoy your 1-1 football team for now. Let's hope it's 2-1 next week. But in the meantime, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.